Hello, this is Terry Burdick with the weekend edition of the Commercial News for Saturday and Sunday, July 20th and 21st. We'll start today with the local news on our front page. Our lead story, His Name Was Christopher, Missing Child Found in Vermilion River by Amy Graham McCarty of the Danville Commercial News. His name was Christopher. The body of a 12-year-old Christopher Jackson was pulled from the waters of the Vermilion River on Friday, less than a quarter of a mile, where he reportedly went under the water and didn't resurface, according to a press release by the Danville Police Department. Christopher was said to be swimming with friends. The Commercial News was on the phone with Christopher's family shortly after his father received news that his son had been found. Cries of anguish could be heard as the father pleaded to see his son. According to Christopher's aunt, Deborah Davis, Danville police had said they were taking his body to Bloomington for an autopsy. On July 15, three boys went down to the Vermilion River, but only two boys returned. Danville police released a press release Tuesday, July 16, alerting the community to a missing 12-year-old boy, but did not give his name or release a photo. Police Chief Christopher Yates said law enforcement did not release Christopher's name because he was a juvenile. He added that the family had shared the boy's photo on social media. On July 15, 2024, around 8:11 p.m., two juveniles notified Danville police that a third juvenile had gone missing in the Vermilion River near the 100 block of Commercial Street, police said in the news release. Danville police immediately responded to the scene and began looking for a 12-year-old male juvenile who had reportedly been swimming near the riverbank when he was overcome by the current and pulled under the water. Christopher was a friendly kid, according to Davis. He's a funny kid, a very funny kid, a very silly kid, Davis said Friday. He's very bubbly, always got to make a joke. You can try to be mean to him and he will turn it into a joke. He loves his siblings and being with his family. She said Christopher was a gamer and that he didn't know how to swim. I was just all about wanting to have fun with his friends, she said. If it ever crossed his mind that this was going to happen to him, I don't think he would have ever gone that far. It was a long walk down to the riverbank. He just wanted to be a kid and have some friends. That was it. His family wants answers as to how Christopher ended up in the water, says Davis. When we heard about it and they called me, they said Chris was with his friends by a lake and supposedly slipped into the water and it took him under. One of the boys tried to grab for him and couldn't. She traveled from Danville, from Iowa, as soon as she heard Christopher was missing. I came down there by the river, and there were lots of people down there. They wouldn't let us close, Davis said of the early days of the search. We asked police, did you find anything? Keys? Clothes? Any little thing? They said they found nothing. Davis said the family was told that security cameras on the Untouchables Motor Club could have footage of the boys going to and coming back from the river, and they requested to view it. They had footage of the kid, she said. We seen three boys walking to go down there, but saw two little boys come out and not my nephew. Davis said she was told the two juvenile boys that were said to be with her nephew ran to the public safety building to get help. An officer heard the call and went straight from the police station and ran down to the river himself and started searching before anyone else could get there, she said. Davis also said a detective asked her on Thursday about an alleged video that was circulating on social media of when her nephew went into the water. She said she'd not seen the video, but believes there is one based on what she has been told. We just want some understanding, she said. We just want to see him one more time. He has a brother and three sisters. Davis said the family wants to thank everyone who was out looking for her nephew. I just want to thank everyone that was out here to all over the world, she said. Christopher will be remembered by his family as being a very friendly kid. I like to call the little boys love bugs because little boys are supposed to be so bad, but they have a soft side, a caring side, and Christopher had that. Continuing on the front page, Spreading Happiness, One Bicycle at a Time, by Keith Gower, the Bicycle Wizard of Vermilion County, by Kayla White. Ridge Farm. With summer in full swing, area residents are taking advantage of the longer days to keep active by hitting the pavement on foot and on wheels. But for bicycle enthusiasts and hobbyists in Vermilion County, repairs or tune-ups can sometimes mean a trip to Champaign-Urbana or across the Illiana border. Local bicycle mechanic Keith Gower aims to change that. Gower, who runs his bicycle repair business out of his home garage in Ridge Farm, has been working on bicycles since he was a middle school kid. Originally from Alameda, California, Gower was raised by a single mom and learned to fix bikes out of necessity. After my father passed, we didn't have the money to take the bike to the bike shop, so I learned to work on all the bikes myself, says Gower. By 10 years old, I was playing with wrenches and working on my own bikes, and then got into BMX and never quit. As he got older, he started working on friends' bikes to bring in a little extra money. I was always the resident bike tech, if you will. Then it morphed into working on them professionally. As Gower steps out of his garage to greet a new client, he's friendly and welcoming, greeting them with a smile. Before the client can say a word, Gower takes a look at their bike and announces what he believes to be the problem. With the expertise of a surgeon, Gower moves sveltely as he works, sometimes sharing long stories from his life or rambling off interesting tidbits from his impressive memory of bicycle history or data about the make and model of the bicycle at hand. Another client who's struggling with finding their balance on a new cruiser-style flat-foot bicycle stands aside as Gower makes minute adjustments to the height and angle of their seat and handlebars. Afterward, Gower's client climbs on the bike and flies down the sidewalk with ease. Gower moved to Vermilion County in the mid-90s and started advertising his services through the Thrifty Nickel, a community advertisement newspaper. He was charging his clients $10 less than his closest competition at the time, Champagne Cycle Company. Fritz reached out to me and he said, if you don't have insurance to work on these bikes, all it takes is one person to get hurt on a bike you worked on. So I stopped immediately and only did it for friends and didn't take money for it. That call was the beginning of a long and prosperous mentoring relationship, says Gower, one which helped to shape the person he is and he would become. Fritz was real good with me. He gave me great deals on parts and stuff because he knew I worked on my own stuff and I didn't have a lot of money at the time, says Gower. So it kind of framed for me the kind of bike shop professional I wanted to be because I'd come in contact with a lot of very abrasive, not very nice individuals, so Fritz informed and shaped me. In 2005, Gower was ready to get back into the biking business and decided to take a job at a local shop instead of working alone. From 2005 to 2014, Gower worked as a bicycle repairman at Cycles Plus in Danville. When owner Randy Van Vickels sold the shop in 2014, Gower stayed on for a time, but differences with the new owners pushed him to go his own way once again. In June of 2014, Gower finally went all in on his own business of bicycle repair. He registered his business with the state and enrolled in an insurance plan, just as Fritz had recommended. He was able to bring 25 to 30% of his client base with him, which helped get it going. For Gower, repairing bicycles is both a labor of love and an opportunity to spread joy. If I can make somebody happy with a bike, that's great because there's not enough happiness in the world, says Gower. In 2020, as COVID ramped up and people were increasingly struggling with feelings of isolation and cabin fever, they took to the streets to enjoy fresh air and exercise. Gower says he saw a boom in bicycle repair needs as far as more and more people became more active. Since then, as the local economy has suffered, biking is a less and less accessible hobby, says Gower. People have a little bit of disposable income to be able to do and afford these things, and it's increasingly gotten more tough financially to do so because the cost has increased too. Increased shipping costs due to reliance on overseas parts has caused prices for bicycle parts to skyrocket. In the last 10 years, there have been shipping supply chain issues and manufacturing issues because people were favoring big bike manufacturers to get their parts instead of small manufacturers or people that are in the general public, so it was really tough, he said. Even so, there's hope, says Gower, as more and more parents get their kids interested in biking. Continuing with stories of local interest, this is from Farm Week. Ample sweet corn crop expected despite challenges. As consumers look to add fresh sweet corn to their summer meals, a couple of Illinois producers say conditions have been ripe for a good cross this season. John Bartman grows 2 to 5 acres of sweet corn near Marengo, which is marketed at a roadside stand in McHenry County and sold to local restaurants. He said it will be another week or two before the crop is ready to harvest, but conditions were good during pollination. We've been very fortunate, he told Farm Week. Our rains have been timely and adequate. He's looking forward to a favorable crop. It's looking very healthy and has very good color, he said. Farther south in Marion County, Vernon Quant has harvested a few batches of his 5-acre crop and recorded similar results. It's definitely been a good crop this year. Quant said he sells his sweet corn at a weekly farmer's market and has repeat customers who buy directly from the farm throughout the summer. We plant 11 or 12 different times, so it's staggered all the way through the year, which makes it more manageable, he said. While the planting season for field corn was delayed, Quant said his sweet corn stayed on track, especially since it's fully irrigated. I start in the middle of March, and the first two batches went in really good. I like to plant it every 7 or 8 days, and it may have been 10 or 11 days in between a couple of them because it was raining a lot, but it didn't really hamper me bad at all. He said there were a few times he planted into less than ideal soil conditions, but knows the variety he chose has proven success with emergence and early growth. However, the season has not come without challenges. Both Bartman and Quant cited raccoons as one of the biggest threats to sweet corn this year. They're unbelievable, Bartman said. They truly do live up to those masks that have over their eyes. They certainly are bandits. Quant said it is additional work and expense to put electric fencing around each of his patches, but it is necessary to control the raccoons and deer. Aside from the varmints, Bartman said he's keeping a close eye on earworm pressure as harvest approaches, but Quant expressed worry about potential wind damage as the tropical storm season unfolds. Well, I'm excited that it's corn season. I bet some of you are as well. Continuing with local news, Taste and Style planned for downtown Danville on August 2nd. The city of Danville will have roads blocked off from 3 to 8 p.m. on August 2nd for First Friday's Taste and Style. Roads that will be closed are Vermilion Street and connecting side streets, Madison Street and Harrison Street, will be barricaded from Madison Street to North Street. Taste and Style will feature a unique blend of culinary delights and cutting-edge fashion. Local food vendors and businesses will come together to showcase the best of our community's creativity and flavor, a news release states. For more information regarding Taste and Style, please visit www.firstfridaysdanville.com. Please see the attached map for clarification. If you have any questions, call our Community Relations Coordinator, Kayla Bryant, at 217-431-2317. Before we turn to state news, let's take a look at our community briefs. Project Success enrolling students. Project Success of Vermilion County is enrolling 7th through 12th grade Danville students into its after-hours program. This free program is held Monday through Friday from 4 to 6:30 p.m. at the Danville Family YMCA. The program offers activities such as field trips, STEM, art, cooking club, DIY club, guest speakers, and more. Please call 217-446-3200 to find out how to sign up. First Nazarene Church to have Vacation Bible School. Danville First Church of the Nazarene at 2212 North Vermilion Street will present the Great Jungle Journey, VBS, July 21st through the 25th from 5:30 to 8 p.m. each day at the church. Children age 4 through 6th grade are invited to attend, and you can register by visiting dfcnaz.churchcenter.com. Lots of church news this week. The Bethel Church Lutheran Church at 901 West Fairchild will be having their annual rummage sale and bake sale on Friday, July 26th from 4 to 7 p.m. and on July 27th, Saturday, from 8 to 1. Proceeds go to local charities. If you're in Westville, Westville Public Library will have a book sale on July 26th from 10 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. The library is located at 233 South State Street in Westville. The Moray Chapel Church of Christ at 19194 East 1100 North Road will have a gospel sing on Saturday, July 27th at 5:30. Performing will be New Creation from Assumption, and a carry-in meal will follow the concert. The Hoopston Public Library is having an adult spelling bee on Monday, July 29th at 2 p.m. This fun event is open to all adults age 18 and up. Participants will compete against each other in multiple rounds. The top speller will win a special prize, and there will be lots of fun and goodies for all participants. Registration is recommended but not required, and you can sign up by calling the library in Hoopston at 217-283-6711. Lots of fun things to do in the community. As we reach the midpoint of our time together today, let's take a look at the death notices. In Danville, William Bill Hagley. Bill Hagley passed away on July 17th. In Hoopston, visitation is from 5 to 7 p.m. on Wednesday, July 24th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Services will be at 10 a.m. on Thursday, July 25th at the funeral home with Pastor Jim Bourdais, and burial will be at the Gundy Cemetery in Danville. William H. Pierce, also of Danville, age 82, passed away at 1:04 p.m. on July 16th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, July 23rd at Sunset Memorial Home and Cremation Center in Danville. A service celebrating Bill's life will be at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, July 24th at the funeral home with Mike Naden officiating. His burial will be at the Hicks Cemetery in Perrysville, Indiana. Terry Berlin of Tilton, age 70, passed away on July 17th. Celebration of his life will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on July 22nd at Sarge's Tap in Danville. John Patrick Homan, age 60, of Westville, passed away at his home on July 17th. Visitation will be from 2 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, July 21st, and his services will be at 4 p.m. on the 21st in the funeral home. Cremation will follow per John's wishes. And that concludes today's reading of our death notices. Turning to state news of interest, Aqua seeks rate increase amid lawyer scrutiny. State regulators seek input from public on proposed rate increases. This comes to us from Andrew Adams at the Capital News, Illinois. The two largest privately owned water utilities in Illinois are seeking to raise rates for a combined 1.5 million customers around the state. Aqua Illinois, which serves 273,000 people, is seeking a $19.2 million increase that would bring it with it a $29.91 in bill increases, according to the Citizens Utility Board, a consumer advocacy group. Illinois American Water, which serves 1.3 million people, is seeking a $152.4 million rate increase. That corresponds to a $24 per month increase in water service bills and $5 per month increase in wastewater service for the average residential customer. The request must be reviewed by the Illinois Commerce Commission before the utilities are allowed to modify their rates. The ICC will then likely modify the request to comply with state law, and it will respond to arguments presented by entities such as the Illinois Attorney General, local municipalities, and advocacy organizations. Decisions in the cases are expected by the end of the year, with water rates going into effect around the start of 2025. To collect public input in the two cases, the ICC set up a series of five hearings around the state. While the first in Jerseyville was held on June 26th, the rest are scheduled over the next 2 weeks. Two hearings in the Illinois American Water cases are scheduled for July 22nd at the Levy Center in Bolingbrook, and close to us on July 23rd at the Champaign Public Library in Champaign. Two hearings on the Aqua Illinois case are scheduled for July 29th at McHenry County College in Crystal Lake and August 1st at Olivet Nazarene University in Bourbonnais. All four hearings begin at 7 p.m. and run for either 2 or 2.5 hours. AARP Illinois, which advocates for Illinoisans aged 55 and older, requested the hearings to give customers a chance to have face-to-face time with the administrative judge who's overseeing the case, according to Jeff Scott, an associate state director at AARP. While his organization is not planning on formally testifying in the cases, it has been circulating petitions and conducting an education campaign with the goal of lowering the requested increases to fixed charges. More to come on that, I know, in the future. Continuing with news around the state, political leaders join roundtable with Illinois Soybean Association to discuss investment in rural communities. Congresswoman Robin Kelly joined a roundtable hosted by the Illinois Soybean Association at the Gilbert Street Cafe that focused on strategies for increasing and sustaining investment in rural communities throughout the U.S. The roundtable featured three more key stakeholders dedicated to rural advancement: Brian Sievers, local farmer and ISA director; J.T. Barnhart, OSF Healthcare Heart of Mary Medical Center and Sacred Heart Medical Center Danville; and Illinois State Senator Paul Farashi. The conversation aimed to identify practical steps to ensure that rural areas receive the attention and investment they need to thrive. Topics included the importance of improving rural health care, investment in transportation infrastructure, market development initiatives through the Soy Innovation Center, and the critical role of agriculture research in addressing rural America's specific challenges, according to a news release. I'm proud to represent a district that has over 4,500 farms, with a vast majority of them owned by families, said Congresswoman Robin Kelly. Families in rural areas deserve high-quality health care, access to internet, and innovative technologies that support sustainable agriculture. These are all resources that help families and their farms thrive. Access to comprehensive, affordable health care is vital to the well-being of our rural communities, said Senator Faraci. Today's roundtable emphasized the need to enhance rural health care services to ensure residents receive the care they deserve. By supporting initiatives that prioritize rural health care, we can address the unique challenges these communities face and improve the quality of life for rural farms and their families. ISA highlighted its commitment to advocating for rural communities and supporting local farmers. I've seen firsthand how the checkoff improves the success of farmers in rural communities, said Brian Sievers, farmer in Vermilion County and the treasurer for ISA. I shared with change makers and community groups that many ways the checkoff serves soybean farmers and in turn helps support rural communities, from investments to increase rural broadband access to work to find solutions for Illinois' aging transportation infrastructure and promoting new soybean uses while supporting agriculture research to manage crop production risks. The checkoff is working for families and farms and communities all across the state to ensure rural America not only survives but thrives. J.T. Barnhart of OSF Healthcare shared how impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic are still felt and being mitigated by emergency rooms which are flooded with patients who may have gone without care due to restricted access for routine care. The expansion of broadband and internet services in rural communities will definitely go a long way in helping systems like ours to expand access, whether that's by going into communities physically or through the expansion of telehealth coverage. The event underscored the importance of collaboration among policymakers, industry leaders, and community representatives to drive meaningful conversation and change about rural communities' growth and development. Moving to sports, and particularly local interest in sports, Robinson called up. Former Danville standout joins the White Sox roster by Chad Dare. Dateline Kansas City. Perseverance is a trait that all athletes should have or learn to develop. Former Danville standout Chucky Robinson was rewarded on Friday with his optimism when the Chicago White Sox added him to their 26-man roster. It will be Robinson's second stint in Major League Baseball after playing 25 games with the Cincinnati Reds in 2022. I've always been very optimistic about getting another chance, Robinson said. I can only control myself, and I know that if I kept working and improving, it was hopeful that I'd get another opportunity. Robinson was batting .246 with 7 homers and 32 RBIs in 55 games this summer with the Charlotte Knights, the AAA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox. Back on June 16th, the White Sox selected a contract of Robinson, adding him to the 40-man roster. That was a big step towards Friday's promotion. The White Sox basically showed me that they were very interested in my abilities with that move, he said. It's a good feeling to know that you're still wanted in this league. Robinson, 29 years old, has been in professional baseball since being drafted by the Houston Astros in the 21st round of the 2016 MLB draft. After 4 seasons in the Astros organization, Robinson signed with the Cincinnati Reds, playing in Chattanooga and Louisville, before being called up in the MLB roster on August 12, 22, and then again on August 23, 22. Statistically, his best game on the plate was in 2023 with the Louisville Bats, as Robinson hit .290 with 13 homers and 74 RBIs, but after spending the whole season in AAA, Robinson elected free agency during the offseason before ultimately signing with the White Sox. You can't dwell on the reasons why you did or didn't get called up, Robinson said. I just have to do everything that I can do to put myself in the best possible position. Going all the way back to high school, I've always been at my best when trying to help my team win the game. That's what I've done every day since I became a professional baseball player. Robinson is joining a White Sox team that's just 27-71 on the season, the worst record in baseball. I can't control what happened in the first half of the season, Robinson said. My job is to come in here and try to be a spark plug for this team and hopefully help them win more games in the second half. Hopefully I'm able to be up here for a very long time. Well, best wishes to you, Mr. Robinson. For those of you following the Danville Dans, 4 Johnstown pitchers combined to no-hit Danville by Chad Dare. There are good nights, there are bad nights. Wednesday night was definitely a bad night for the Danville Dans. Four Johnstown pitchers combined to toss a no-hitter as the Mill Rats defeated the Dans 6-0 before 321 fans at Danville Stadium. "It was one of those nights," said Danville Dans manager Eric Coleman, looking to see if there was a full moon out on Wednesday. It was not. "We weren't able to keep the line going, and things just didn't go our way," he added. "It's baseball. That happens. Just like after a win, it's over at midnight. Good teams will bounce back." The Dans, who had their four-game winning streak snapped, are still in a tie for first place in the Prospect League Central Division as the Terre Haute Rex lost the Cape Catfish on Wednesday night. "We still have a good team," said Coleman, whose squad is 25-17 this summer. "We just need to start a new winning streak." "But does it matter that his team was held hitless?" "That doesn't matter to me. A loss is a loss," he said. "Fluky things happen in this game, and it just didn't go our way tonight. We've picked up some crazy wins this season, and tonight they got us." While the Dans didn't record an official hit, they were able to load the bases in the first and seventh innings against the Mill Rats. Johnstown starter Ian Corn got out of the jam in the first inning with a strikeout, while reliever Will Judy avoided giving up any runs in the seventh with an inning-ending double play. It was the second double play of the game for the Mill Rats, who improved to 19-23 overall and 6-7 in the second half of the Prospect League season. Looking to our future, and staying in our sports theme, American Legion to host state golf tournament. The 10th annual American Legion State Golf Tournament will be held in Danville on August 3rd and 4th at the Harrison Park Golf Course and Turtle Run Golf Club. Opening ceremonies will begin at 8 a.m. Saturday, August 3rd at Harrison Park Golf Course. The American Legion riders will be present, and there will be presentation of colors and the national anthem. The Danville American Post Legion Post 210 Honor Guard and other area post honor guards will present the colors. Format is a four-person scramble. Play will begin at 9 a.m. at both Harrison Park and Turtle Run on day one. Golfers will switch courses on day two with the shotgun start at 9 a.m. "We're excited to bring this annual tournament to our city and to honor our veterans," said Jeannie Cook, executive director for the Danville Area and Visitors Bureau. "We look forward to hosting it for many years to come." Proceeds from the tournament will go to support veteran charities. The cost of play is $130 and includes Saturday and Sunday rounds, cart fees, a tea prize, Saturday dinner, and prize money. Entry is limited to 54 teams. To register, call the Danville Area Visitors Bureau at 800-383-4386. Also, as we're looking forward to events to enjoy, the Farmers Market is going to feature Christmas in July. It is Christmas in July at the Danville Farmers Market. A special market is planned for July 27th. There will be a Christmas market to give customers a preview of some Christmas items for sale and a chance to store away some gifts and spread out the cost of gift giving. Additionally, the market will be hosting a backpack food for kids program. "We are so proud to help this organization," coordinated by Rose Holy Cross. Market organizers say, "We'll be posting their wish list later this week, or they always accept cash. The market customers have always shown up and contributed to this group, and we're counting on you to do so again this year." The July 27th Farmers Market will feature a Christmas gift bag giveaway, and every purchase made earns a raffle drawing ticket. The drawing will take place at 11:30 and is for a gift bag that will represent each vendor at the market. Entrants need not be present to win. That sounds fun. As we wrap up our time together today, let's take a look at what's going on at the Danville Library. Danville Library offers something for everyone with summer programs. The Danville Public Library is ending their summer with fun with events for all ages. Upcoming events at the library include, get your calendars out, July 29th, Teen Movie Mondays. Every Monday, the library will show a movie in the teen zone and serve popcorn. Teens can suggest and vote on which movie to watch, and this event is from 4 to 6 p.m. Also on July 29th, the Children's Wonder Garden Club. This is a weekly gardening event for children and families. The Garden Club runs from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. and meets in the first floor meeting room. This program is made possible through a partnership with the University of Illinois Extension Office. On July 30th, it's Teen Tabletop Tuesdays. Stop by the Teen Zone on Tuesdays to play board games and eat snacks. This event is held every Tuesday from 4 to 6 p.m. Also on July 30th, Tween It! This week's event is bingo. Visit the library and play bingo and win prizes. Tween it. Tuesdays begin at 4:30 in the children's room. The event is for children ages 8 to 12. On July 30th, it's the Wee Wiggler Story Time. Join others for action rhymes, stories, and songs. And this event is for children ages 5 and under and takes place on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. in the First Floor Meeting Room. On July 31st, there's also a Rainbow Playground Group or Playgroup for ages for toddlers for offering socialization, play, and STEAM activities. And also on July 31st, there's Dungeons & Dragons, a tabletop role-playing game. New players are always welcome. The event takes place on Wednesdays from 4 p.m. in the Teen Zone. Lots and lots going on for the kids at the Danville Public Library. Well, thanks for joining me today. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you the commercial news from Saturday and Sunday, July 20th and 21st. I look forward to being with you again soon.